What's up, guys? Welcome to another episode of Gestalten. My name is Eric Galina, aka Form Trends, and I am here with my colleague
Martin Groschwald. Hello, hello. What's up?
We are again in Martin's concept house den, and Martin is joining us now with a little bit of a sore leg, but that's not the topic of conversation that we'd like to discuss. What it is that we would like to discuss is the current events that are happening in the auto industry right now, particularly in relation to design. So in this last, month and a half, pretty much since our last podcast, there's been a couple of changes announced to upper management. And there's been basically four new hires. There's always a lot of movement happening around September, October. Mm-hmm. People started to come back into work and coming to new jobs. And I think the headline for this new, the major change, I think the major headline was two people. Let's start off with Karim Habib, who left Infiniti and went to join Kia. So basically, Karim was not in that role for that long by, normal standards. I mean, he was there for... Or was it a little less than 2 years, wasn't it?
Yeah, pretty much about 2 years. And just to kind of give this a little bit of a background information, usually a car cycle, is about 5 years. So when you start developing a new car, when you start developing a new project, and it's a production car, I think we have to put this out there, show cars work a little bit differently. But you're kind of going through a process from, for about 5 years from the first initial idea to when you actually see the car on the road. So it was to a certain degree surprising, I think, that this change was announced. I also, to a certain kind of degree, think it maybe wasn't that surprising as a whole idea, because I personally believe that if you are in this kind of Japanese environment, it can be, for a foreigner coming in, it can be very challenging. So it is sometimes nothing that has to do with the person itself. And I don't think we have to say that Karim did a good or a bad job. I think, me personally, I think he did a very cool job with Infiniti. We've praised the work that he did. But being in such a high position in a Japanese company can sometimes be very tricky, can sometimes be a little bit challenging. And I think, maybe that was a little bit difficult. Maybe that had something to do with it. He obviously didn't grow up in this kind of Nissan lifestyle, as, for example, his boss Afonso Abeza did. Also, to a certain degree, Matt Weaver, who's running the NDE studio, who was at Nissan for a long time, then left and came back. So I think, understanding this kind of culture, if you pretty much are being thrown in, can be a challenge. And it's generally sad to see him go, because the stuff that he did, I think, was really cool. I look back in Project 9, Project 10, those things were just really cool. And, for him moving to Kia, and obviously, getting into the footsteps of Peter Schreier is going to be another big move for him, because Peter has done such a great job over there. Obviously, stepped back a little bit after he announced his kind of part-time, retirement, doing a little management and stuff. But generally speaking, I mean, these are big footsteps to fill, and I hope that he can fill those, because especially with the Stinger, I mean, we talked about about the Exceed or Proceed and all these previous cars of Kia over the past few months and a couple of years, they did some great stuff. So, a big challenge for him ahead to keep that kind of level as well, and it's going to be interesting to see how he's going to develop it further.
Yeah. Certainly. I mean, I can't speak to the frustrations that, Karim Habib may have endured. Obviously, the company culture it's a massive change from where he came from. BMW beforehand was obviously a very different company culture. I agree with you in terms of working in Japan. It's probably quite a bit different culturally, but also now, as you mentioned, there's product cycles that tend to take place within automakers for, 4, 5, 6, 7 years, and you will never see a production project from him, not for a good while. And so it's interesting to see, he did make his mark from a concept perspective, but again, it comes back to infinity. And infinity, all we've seen, unfortunately, is concepts, like a whole range of concepts. They're beautiful cars, but, you know, showcasing a design direction that, you know, kind of shifted when Karim took over ever so slightly, and then is developed into what I believe to be a very clear and very nice design. And let's not, you know, Karim is a brilliant design designer, a very great design leader as well. So he is, you know, obviously that's what the people at Kia thought, which is why he was offered that promotion and that role over there as VP of design for Kia. And globally as well, I might add. So Infiniti, I guess, was a smaller fish, perhaps, in terms of what he was able to accomplish. And perhaps he met some obstacles along the way. But again, I don't want to speculate. But it will be interesting to see what comes out of Kia as well, because they've always been design-led ever since Peter Schreyer came over. They were pretty much the first Asian brand to be design-led. I mean, there was no... You know, other companies kind of followed Kia's lead in that regard. You know, it's a very interesting time over at Hyundai Motor Group, including Kia right now. There's a lot of really strong personalities over there, a lot of really talented individuals, and Karim is definitely one of them. So, and Taisuke Nakamura is a great designer as well, a brilliant man. But as you mentioned, he was raised in that Nissan environment. He's been brought up through, and so now he's taking over Infiniti, as he rightly should. I am a big fan of his work as well. And I sure hope that Infiniti can continue the momentum that was kind of laid out by these concepts that we've now seen and come out with some decent production product that we can, you know, consider to be a viable alternative to some of the German luxury brands, or indeed, you know, Lexus and the like.
Yeah.
So it's interesting times. So I guess moving on now into the second biggest design news to develop in these last few months since we did our last podcast, and that would be Josef Kaban.
Yes.
Yeah. Over there at BMW for, you know, not a very long time before he was unfortunately transitioned out. Domagoj Ducek took over all of BMW. So BMW M, BMW I, and then BMW itself. So he basically is leading the entirety of BMW's products, core products, under Adrian Van Hooydonk, of course. And unfortunately, Josef, and we mentioned this before, you know, was relegated to a Rolls Royce. It's not a job that he signed up for. He just kind of, he just got it.
I think, I don't want to, you know, I don't want to say we can look into the future or we can predict anything, but we actually predict this, that this is going to happen. I think, and you have to understand a little bit of the dynamics of what design is all about. And, you know, when you're in this management position and on these top level management positions, and Josef, you know, he was at Skoda. And then he was supposed to come in to lead BMW as a brand. So those kind of guys, no matter who you speak to, there is always a certain ego that comes with these positions. Yeah. And it's not necessarily something bad. I don't want to say that ego is a bad thing, but it's a very important understanding that you need to have to understand why we predicted this. So you come in from a position, which is Skoda, where you are... a highly respected leader, where you've led the transition from Skoda as a cheap brand into a mid-market brand, which had great value for the quality that it produces, still produces up today. I mean, you know, the stuff that comes out right now is still part of that work that Josef did at Skoda. You move over to BMW and you pretty much get demoted. There's no other word for that. So we don't necessarily know what happened in BMW that this move happened, but he did get demoted. Other people would have just said, like, okay, let's fire him. He was demoted to Rolls Royce. There was probably a reason for him to accept this as well. You know? But this was never supposed to last. We hear things from all different kinds of people. And I think he did really enjoy working at Rolls Royce from what I knew, what I've heard about it. He obviously did the Bugatti Veyron. So there is a certain kind of connection. But if you're coming from Skoda, which from a design representation has a very high standard, which is a very high reputation. You go to BMW and then you go down to Rolls-Royce. This has nothing to do with the brand Rolls-Royce, which I still think is extremely interesting, but you go down from a multi-million selling company to a company that sells about, I don't know, 4,000 cars a year.
Yeah, right.
There's a certain kind of, let's say, you know, excitement that you just don't have anymore.
Absolutely.
Yeah. The clientele might be a little bit different, but it's just a big step, and it's a big step down in terms of just hierarchy, in terms of the food chain when it comes to design. And so I don't think this comes necessarily as a surprise. For me, what it shows a little bit is the problems that BMW have. You know, they've lost people over and over again. They brought someone in, they've lost that person after about 2 years. So I always want to say, like, you know, quo vadis BMW, because what is the next step? It seems like you've tried everything. You're promoting guys now from the internal. It seems like a little bit more of a conservative move. You know, you let's maybe call them revolutionary people, you know, go, or they have to go. Where is the new stuff? You know, where is the development of BMW? And combining this with the not necessarily just design industry criticism, but the general auto industry criticism of the new design language, big kidneys and stuff like that. Think about this, what you want. There's big criticism about this. It's just not, it doesn't shed a good light on BMW design as a whole. Yeah. You can call it a management problem, you can call it a marketing problem, call it product problem. I don't know. And I don't know which kind of direction it goes. But it kind of shows that there is a much deeper running problem at BMW that maybe a lot of people.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, again, I'm not inside BMW. I do know that if I was Joseph and I had been cast aside as he was, I, you know, would have rightly sought a different avenue. As you mentioned, you know, it's nothing to do with the brand. Obviously, it's the epitome of luxury. It's a highly regarded brand, really quite elitist. But if you're used to doing so many different programs and working and managing a team and getting things out there, you kind of lose that momentum. And designers really need that creativity. And, you know, of course, there are a lot of egos in the design industry, as you mentioned. But I think ultimately, somebody needs to have that driving force and continuous amount of projects to kind of drive and keep that creative, you know, momentum. And that's what really drives people in this business, I think, is to do something new and interesting and innovative. And you know, Rolls-Royce, you know, is for, you know, the bespoke program and things like that is serving a very high end, you know, one percenters clientele, but I don't think they have sufficient movement within the product, you know, pipeline to really keep someone like Joseph, really, motivated and interested. So anyway, so that's what happened recently. I'm really eager to see where he turns up. Because well, that's going to be interesting.
I think there was one article that I saw is that due to the connections that he had from Volkswagen, the speculation currently is that he will show up at either Volvo or the Volkswagen Group in general because of the connections from, you know, his past days at the Volkswagen Group. So yes. This seems the most likely, but we have no info on that yet.
No.
So we'll see. Yeah. We'll talk about it once we know. Obviously, these speculations sound, you know, very reasonable, but it always depends on if there's a position for him on these kind of levels.
Absolutely.
I'm pretty sure he will show up somewhere new very quickly. And then we'll see what's going to happen with him.
Yeah.
Definitely quite exciting because he's a great talent. And I'm very, very excited to see where the ways will take him.
Absolutely.
So let's actually go back to the Koreans. Because we wanted to quickly talk about, we actually mentioned that Sasha Silipanov obviously left Genesis and it is now out who is the successor, which is Filippo Perini, who already started his position pretty much a month ago now. And he will be taking over from Sasha in the Frankfurt studio, or like in the Rüsselsheim studio for Genesis. And yeah, I'm pretty sure that the best thing to say is we hope that he can continue what Sasha has started. Cool products came out of that little studio. with the Essentia, with the Mint. Mm-hmm. So let's see what else is going to come out of there.
Yeah.
With the addition of Filippo.
Yeah. And I mean, I think we did mention this last time, but the whole way that Kia and Hyundai Motor Corporation and Genesis, which is the luxury division of the Hyundai Motor Group, is moving is more towards a digital phase. And we're seeing this with hires like Simon Losby, with Luc Donkervolk, who vastly believes in this methodology. And, you know, a lot of design studios are following suit, but he really has seized that. And the biggest advocate for that type of design has always been Filippo Perini. Mm-hmm. I've known Filippo for a very long time when he was at Lamborghini. Then he made the transition through Ital Design. But when he followed on from Luc Donkervolk at Lamborghini, it's still early days in terms of what digital, the capabilities were for digital tools. And the Lamborghini design direction that basically came out of that process was very much in tune with what was able to be realized through those digital tools. And it was massively successful. It still is. I think it's going to be very difficult for Mitya Borker to move forward with a different style, but nonetheless, what he did over there, you know, following on from the Murcielago and moving into Aventador and all sorts of different things that he did off the back of that, you know, and now he transitioned, as I said, through Ital Design and over to Genesis, again, very strong digital team, is going to be very, very interesting. And I do hope that he can follow on from Sasha, because Sasha built that team.
Yeah.
And he did, they've done some very, very good work and extremely talented creative individuals over there.
What I'm going to be really interested to see just as a whole, I mean, we spoke now about Kia, now we're speaking about Genesis, but there is a little bit of a theme, of course, since Luke joined, that a lot of these guys are very Volkswagen heavy. So there's a certain Volkswagen group background into this. And I interestingly spoke to a few people who said at the Frankfurt show, didn't mention it at the time, but they said, look, if you look into the show car that they've shown in Frankfurt, you can see a little bit this Volkswagen-esque thing in that show car. Mm-hmm. So I'm really interested to see, like, you know, what could Genesis be if I compare it to a Volkswagen? Hmm. Or, you know, is it going to be the Audi? Is that the kind of direction that they want to move into?
Mm.
You know, what is going to be Hyundai? What is going to be Kia? So with this background, obviously, Karim is a little bit of an exception because he's one of the few people who have not worked at Volkswagen in the past. But understanding and seeing how this develops, again, it's not a criticism of who you hire. It's more about, you know, you can see tendencies that a lot of guys from Volkswagen come in. And of course, there's going to be some influence from what they have learned in that kind of group.
Mm-hmm.
But can they keep their individuality with this, with these other brands?
Yeah.
That's what I want to see. This is where I'm going to be really interested and excited about to go, like, you know, a year or two down the line.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, how can they step out of this, you know, a little bit of Volkswagen-esque kind of direction and really develop what is Hyundai, what is Genesis? Obviously, Kia has a very strong personality through Peter Schreier, but going into that kind of direction. That's for me what with these hires are most interesting to look at. You know, it's like, well, how does it compare? Volkswagen wanting to get rid of brands, you know, so if they have 3 to 5 and then you compare it to other companies as well, where they staggered up. So,
Yeah, no, it's going to be interesting, the products that are produced. I mean, obviously, yes, there are a lot of people that came through the Volkswagen group that are now over there and in charge. And Volkswagen's a great school. So, you know, it makes perfect sense that, you know, a lot of people would come up through Volkswagen. But yeah, I mean, it's the concept car that was on show. We spoke about it briefly, obviously, when we were in Frankfurt. But it is perhaps an indication of the direction that they're looking to go. You know, it's you know, more finessed, more refined, but it is very Volkswagen. I think, you know, regardless, you've got people that have come up through Volkswagen and they have perhaps a certain style. But I think the good designers will always be malleable and will always come up with something new and some different style and will always develop something that is really relevant for the markets that they're looking to conquer. And with the team that is in place now, you know, we're talking Sengup Lee, Kareem Habib, now Simon Losby as well, Luke obviously at the helm, and now Filippo in this Genesis studio here in Europe, because there's another one in California as well. Extremely talented individuals, and it's going to be very interesting to see how everything does turn into product. So the last thing I think that I want to reference and refer to, speak about, is Carlo Bonzanigo, who went to Pininfarina not very long ago. And
two years ago, something like that?
It wasn't all that long ago. And he went in there and he changed things up drastically, and he hired a fresh new team and everybody was doing great. And for some unexplained reasons, again, there's some speculation surrounding that I'm not going to get into, but you know, there's different accounts as to why he chose to leave. And now Pininfarina, arguably the biggest carrozzeria, Ital Design used to be up there since it was taken over by the VW group. It's not at the same level, but the carrozzeria in general are not at the same level. I mean, Bertone doesn't even exist anymore. Is now basically Pininfarina is a ship out at sea without without a captain at the helm. So it's going to be interesting to see what it is that they choose to do over there, and who they choose to bring on board to lead this team that they've built up. I do know, of course, and others do as well. It's in the public domain. They are working with VinFast as well as a number of other automakers, and they're doing a variety of different things across the board, not just cars, but Pininfarina has been involved in a number of other things as well.
Architecture,
industrial design. I mean, they're branching out into all sorts of different areas. And anyway, so that's, we will share information as to, you know, who is going to be taking over over there, and perhaps, you know, get some insight as to the future direction for this really quite important carrozzeria. But
it doesn't necessarily surprise me, I think, if you look a little bit in what Pininfarina has become over the past few years. You have to see that globally, not just in Italy, but also in China. Mm-hmm. It has become not a carrozzeria anymore. It's just a design studio. Mm. And it's a design studio that you can rent. Mm. And I think if you look at the products that came out of there, none of these products were as outstanding as we were used to in the past. I mean, if I look back with, with the Ferrari days, they did like the small, which one was the one with them where they only did six cars? The Ferrari that was done under
Fabio Filippini.
Fabio, yes.
From Peugeot, former Peugeot, was leading the team then.
Sorry, and Fabio, I thought they did
some brilliant stuff. I thought they did some brilliant stuff over there. During his tenure, and so anyway, it's not like during the time, of course, it was the heyday, the Ferrari days, you know, they were doing stuff for everybody, and
but it was still cool stuff, you know what I mean? It was like it was going still in a very modern way back to the roots of making products that were generally Pininfarina. Ferrari Sergio, that was the
Sergio
one.
Yes,
great car. Mm-hmm. And you know, you just don't have that feeling anymore. I mean, when I see the cars now, I look at the Karma, you look at the VinFast, there is nothing Pininfarina on this anymore. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, this could be done by almost any halfway decent design studio. Mm-hmm. You know, there is not this Pininfarina touch for me anymore. So I'm going to be interested to see what kind of direction they're moving into. Are they going to be moving into this kind of more supplying directions, like, yeah, this is the design, we can do whatever you want, or are they going to go back into these carrozzeria days and it's like, no, this is Pininfarina design and we tell you what is the best design. That's pretty much it.
Yeah.
You know,
I think
otherwise they'll lose it a little bit, like Pujaro and what Ital Design obviously did. So that's going to be interesting. So I think at the helm, if you're that kind of position, and you may be working on projects where people tell you what they want and then you just pretty much execute. I think as a design boss, you might be a little bit limited in terms of your input on that one. So I could imagine why people, you know, why he left. Mm. But let's see what's going to happen.
Yeah. Right.
But let's talk about some fun. Let's talk about some
moving cars. Moving on. Now, cars, which is So since we last met, there's been a couple of cars that have been unveiled. We will talk, obviously, more about the Tokyo reveals once we see those in Tokyo later on. In next week is the Tokyo show. So
yes,
we can after that,
this one
we will talk about
this time. Due to my injury and just because we have so many other things to do, we will not be able to be in Tokyo. So we will not be able to have a live recording from the Tokyo Motor Show, which I am personally absolutely gutted about because it's my absolute favorite show. They have the coolest stuff there. I saw the Daihatsu cars already and I'm just like, I just fell in love. I was like, yes, this is exactly my cup of tea. So we will talk about this in a podcast, unfortunately not from Tokyo.
Yes.
But we will go all in on the Tokyo Motor Show because I love this little thing.
Yeah. Unfortunately, like many motor shows, Tokyo's been taking a dive for a while and I'm sure it's going to be continued. But regardless, it's very much a local show.
But we'll talk about a Japanese company.
We will talk about when we, once we see everything that's been revealed. But yeah, it's going to be a virtual walk around without us being actually on the show stand. But since then, before we dive into that, let's discuss some of the new cars that have been revealed. So since Frankfurt, there's two vehicles that are quite different that we should, I think, discuss. And the first, I think, is, the more tried and true, automotive, typical ICE engine, massively popular vehicle here in Europe. That pretty much brought Nissan back from the dead, and that's the Juke and the Qashqai in some sense. The Qashqai basically reinvented this crossover typology, which is very much the mainstay family vehicle. But the Juke was the first ever B-segment crossover that everyone wanted to get one into their product portfolio, and every single automaker scrambled to do an imitation of the Juke. And with the new Juke, which was also again designed by Matt Weaver under Matt Weaver's team.
He would go ahead of if we would say it was designed.
Yeah, so
by
it wasn't
him.
It wasn't designed by him. The first one very much was him. That was a fruit of his labor. He in the new one, I suppose. Of course he is the director of NDE, so he's probably a bit more hands-off this time around. I mean, the old car was 10 years and change, 10 years old, I think. So it really had some design longevity, I suppose. It still looked pretty good. It was, it was always a bit of a weird one. I mean, some people consider it an ugly duckling. Some people really liked it. Maybe it was, for the typology and so on. I think from a package perspective, from a unique design perspective, it was quite interesting, certainly. The new one is very, I had a chance to see it at NDE. They, the guys over there had a little cars and coffee thing where they invited a bunch of people. It was a fantastic event. Because it's in central London, it's underneath the A40 and everything. It's really quite urban and really very cool. And, there was Jaggy types there and stuff. Anyway, very cool to see that car in the metal because it's very much an exercise in just incredible refinement. I mean, everything, and there's so many different faces to that car as well. The colorways, I mean, they really know their target demographic. They really, really know their audience. And the way that they are doing, the option packs, I guess, that they're providing for this vehicle in terms of what they're offering, you can really create a very individual product specifically tailored to your taste. And I think that's brilliant. But, if you look at just a general surfacing perspective from the exterior, the front face of that car as well, it looks like, it's just grown up. And that is what Matt said was the design brief. I mean, it was, that was very much the objective was to make it appear, like an evolutionary process. And that's what it is. And, but the certain elements, the rear end with the deck lid and, the rear, the trunk and the way that everything just works together around the tail lamps and everything. These are massively complicated surfaces that are really very well resolved. And I think you need to see it in the middle to fully appreciate it. Like any car, you need to walk around it and take it in and look at the how the light plays around that. And I think they've done a brilliant job.
I have to say, obviously, I haven't seen it, so I trust your word and everything. But from what I can see is exactly what you've just mentioned. I think it's just a mature car. Hmm. It seems like if you look at the first generation Juke, which was this quirky, you know, new little thing made for the young kids, like, you know, like the young families, and in a very good price range as well. So it was something where you, when you buy this kind of car, you liked a little something extra. It was not this kind of general, like, you know, you buy a, you know, a wagon or something like that. So,
no.
And they've made exactly that. They've just like, look, how can we keep this customer group that bought the first one and now we buy the new one, but have also aged 10 years. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's the maturing factor behind it. And I think if they can keep all these guys plus add a few more, because, you know, the car's still quite quirky. Mm. It's not a conventional car design as you would expect maybe from a Volkswagen, BMW, Mercedes, and all those, you know, those companies. Mm. But this is obviously what makes this car. So this little quirkiness is why the people want to have it. This is why the people like it as well.
Mm-hmm.
And exactly what you just mentioned, you know, it's one of those cars everybody talks about. Some people like it, some people don't like it, but the people talk about it. Mm. That's how it sells. So I like this evolution. I think it's big enough in terms of design to really make it a new car, but it's still fundamentally a Juke.
Mm-hmm.
And what I personally like about this, and this is something I think the Japanese companies, you know, work around a little bit better, is they're not just saying like, look, this is a Nissan, so it has to look like any other Nissan. Like, no, this is the Nissan Juke. This can be a bit different. A lot of the German companies, American companies don't tend to do that. They tend to have their design language. And I do appreciate that. The longer we're in this business, the more and more I do appreciate the Japanese for doing that. It's just fun. It's like, you know, don't take yourself with the brand too seriously. Mm-hmm. Take yourself seriously, of course, but have some quirky ones. Mm-hmm. And the Juke is exactly that. And it helps, I think, Nissan to kind of spread out a little bit, go to different customer groups that buy these cars.
Yeah.
So I hope I'll see it sometime in the flesh. Mm-hmm. Again, we're not going to be.
I'm
in,
sure you will.
I'm sure that thing is probably going to sell like crazy.
But I do appreciate that you know what you just talked about the Japanese car makers, and there's consistency across the different model ranges, but it's less evident, less in your face. Yeah. You know, less like Mercedes and BMW, even Audi, where you can't actually tell the different model lines apart. I really do appreciate the fact that each of these model lines has its own identity. That's one of the things that I really do appreciate, definitely. So moving on into another one that does actually, you know, have some brand consistency. We've only seen one model unveiled so far, but there was one picture that showed a range of vehicles within this vehicle line, and that is a new EV startup called Canoo.
Previously called eVelocity.
Laden to the, you know, to the rafters with former BMW and Faraday Future designers.
I think it's
pretty much Faraday Future just moved.
Exactly. I want to say something about this because I had the chance to see the Faraday 91, and that was a fantastic car. So when I heard that all the major guys moved over from Faraday over to eVelocity back then and now Canoo, I was just like, oh, I hope they can do that again. Yeah. But we have to say one thing. So Canoo is. It's not necessarily a car.
Mm-mm.
It's a skateboard.
It's a service.
Yeah.
Mm.
You can't buy these things. You can only subscribe to them. Monthly subscription, which is already a little bit something new.
Mm.
Something that I think if they really bring that out in such a way. The structure of the company is interesting. They're not producing themselves. They're franchising someone to produce the car.
Mm.
So from an entire perspective, it looks much smaller and much more compact and much more cash flow relevant than maybe a Faraday, all the other EV companies at the moment. So that's already very interesting. The other thing that I find very interesting, so the head of design, creative director, whatever you want to call it, is Richard Kim.
Mm-hmm.
Richard obviously started his own little consultancy. So it's from our situation, from what we know, a little bit unclear is if did he do that project actually as the Canoe head of design, or did he do it via his own consultancy?
Mm.
Which again would make Canoe a little bit more flexible in terms of, okay, how do we are we going to do our products in the future? So it's a very new kind of setup. It's a very new company setup, service setup, and also design setup. You have the skateboard, and pretty much on top of the skateboard, you can build things.
Mm.
And just to kind of sum this up, I think they've shown 5 or 6 different kind of models on what this can be. So they had like what I call a toaster, and that's what it looks like. They have a little bit of a roadster style car. They had a fully autonomous, commercial vehicle style.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
They had a little pickup on there as well.
Yeah, yeah.
So they've shown a little bit of the idea, but you've actually written this really interesting thing about Canoe where you said, like, is this the future of automotive design?
Mm-hmm.
And I think to a certain degree, it will be like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this will be very much like in the cities. Yes, something like this. It doesn't need to be Canoe, but something like this with a pod style system, a changeable platform. So mm-hmm. you have the skateboard, and then you put something on it pretty much. I think within the cities, maybe not for transportation, but maybe for commercial reasons, this can be the future,
mm-hmm.
you know? Is it what I personally like? I understand where they're coming from, but I'm not so sure.
Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah, there's, of course, you know, do you like it? Do you not like it? Look, I want to address a couple of things that you mentioned. Like, yes, I did write an article about this because, you know, when I saw it, I was like, this is pretty cool. For our times, right? It's very relevant when you look at what's happening in the world. People are not, you know, certainly the younger generation is not overly concerned with only a vehicle. Driving a 67 Mustang is not their priority. You know, they'd rather go out and buy the new iPhone, which is amazing. But regardless, dropping money into a car that's going to sit there for 90% of its life and, you know, is not their priority. And there you've got to pay insurance on it. You got to find a place to park it and everything. So the subscription model is not brand new. I mean, you know, Volvo came out with this before. It's been tried by other companies in the past. Volvo, I think, is, you know, having a very difficult time right now because why, you know, subscribe to something when you can actually lease it for less money? So it's, I think there's a lot of quirks that need to be ironed out. But if you look at, you know, so Canoe and Richard Kim is, head of design over there, formerly head of BMW I, or not
exterior.
Head.
He did exterior. He was not the head of BMW.
Did the i3, which was a very quirky car.
He did the production i3. I don't think he did the initial sketch for the concept i3.
Right.
But he was very much involved in production i3, i8. But he wasn't, let's put it that way, he was an integral part of the i program.
Yes, indeed. And then he moved to Faraday.
Correct.
And they did a couple of, interesting proposals, one of which was the FF91 that you mentioned. There's been a lot of interesting designs that have come out of, you know, under his direction. But the more interesting thing to me is, you know, and what I referred to in the article is the way that things are moving, right? If we're looking at people not interested in buying vehicles, we're looking at LA as a region where the car is integral for getting around and people don't necessarily want to drive and, you know, parking's a hassle and whatever, this, that, and the other. If you can get a subscription service and later on, if you can get an autonomous subscription service to come and pick you up when you've had a nice evening out at the bar, like, you know, why not? Right. That's going to be great. And that's, I think, the direction that they're looking towards. So essentially it's a bit of a combination of everything, right? It's the skateboard platform isn't necessarily new. We've seen it on like EV, GM, like Highwire a while ago. We've seen platform sharing in terms of different body styles that they're able to vehicles that they're able to produce, but all of these were kind of cookie cutter badge engineering things. And there's now, and the subscription service we've seen already through Volvo. So there's all of these different ingredients that are very much relevant and of the time that we're now living in, coming together to create this new mode of transportation, which, if it's going to work anywhere, is going to be in a place like LA,
that
where
is exactly,
the car is necessary.
That is exactly what I just wanted to mention. I think a product like this is also a child of where it was born. And LA, if you've ever been to LA, LA is not just one city. It's pretty much like a bunch of suburbs, suburbs coming together. These suburbs have grown massively big, and you want to get from A to B. The public transportation system is almost non-existent. They've completely forgotten about this in the past, and now they kind of regret it a little bit. So you need to have a service like that, which becomes pretty much your public transportation. So from that angle, it is very LA specific. Now, if you go to London, obviously as a little bit of a counterpart of this, or to New York, if we stay in the States, there's a very strong transportation system, public transportation system. You do not need a level way from A to B, like a car, like a taxi or whatever, because A, there's too many cars anyways, and B, the public transportation is just way too good to use it. So from that kind of perspective, and this is what we now have to see, and this is something I want to mention in this one, this is the product where we're not just judging it based on the appearance. We're actually judging it on what we see as the experience.
But yeah, but that's design. I mean, design is not just aesthetics.
No, but this is the point. Like, you know, like this is one of the very, very first products now where we have to bring those things together. We've been talking about this a long time that, you know, experience and, like, you know, haptic design should always come together. But now this doesn't work. It's just either or. You know, we see this as a whole. And I think this will be the interesting part. Like, will this succeed? We don't know. If it's going to succeed, it's going to be in very specific cities. I don't think it's going to be a global thing. I cannot see anything like that work here in Munich at this moment in time. But LA, 100%.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think there's a class thing involved here as well, right? Because people generally don't like to share things. And if you start, you know, that's why Uber is so successful, right? I mean, people, when Uber first started out, the only thing you could get was luxury, like town cars, right? You didn't get a Prius. It was a step above. There was another company that I don't even know what it's called now because it's been, like, you know, just totally superseded by Uber. But Uber used to be like your limousines. You know, that's what you booked an Uber. It was like the high end. And that is pretty much what Canoe, I think, is offering. It's that private transportation. So you're in your own space. You're able to go to, you know, X and Z and go all to all those little neighborhoods that connect in LA and become, you know, their own little cities. That is basically the way that people are going to be moving. And in New York, I definitely see this, you know, being a success. But, you know, it wasn't successful for Cadillac, for example, right? It wasn't successful. I mean, there's all these different services, concierge, whatever Cadillac called it, which was kind of, perhaps it was a bit ahead of its time, but it's these subscription services that automakers are selling. It needs to, again, it needs to be fine-tuned a little bit, but I think that there is a desire for something like that just from a pure convenience factor. And, you know, if you're not driving, then it makes even more sense. But again, you know, I think we're a ways off before we see full autonomy. But yeah, I mean, from, you know, a Canoe from a design perspective still is, you know, it has that design consistency. It has these cool lamps in the front, this recognizable face, this really product-like aesthetic. You know, it's very, and you know, I just love. And the modular thing is not new as well. That's something that I failed to mention.
That
was like
before.
That was Jijaro in like 1970. Was like a long time ago. But they've managed to kind of realize it, and I hope that it does become a reality. At the moment, they've just shown that one box poster thing that you call, which is, you know, a great people carrier.
Again, and I don't mean this in a bad way. It's best kind of description of what it looks
it
like.
It is. It's a box. But I mean, if you look, there's a video online somewhere, it takes you through the actual design of it. And Video is just amazing in terms of conveying things. When you've, I wasn't there at the unveil at Abakini where they showed the car, but when you, they have this just glide through video that you know, with the camera moves and everything, just shows you the space inside the vehicle and everything, and it looks very, very inviting. And again, I think it's moving up a rung from, you know, your basic transportation, riding in a train next to some smelly dude, and then sitting in this semi, you know, quite luxurious mode of transport, right? I think that that is definitely the future. And in terms of being the future of automotive design, I think when you take certain elements and you combine them and you mix them together as they have to deliver this final product, I think we're going to see, you know, designers basically creating various different modules, if you will, that are going to ride over a common platform that will be developed by X, Y, or Z manufacturer. They're going to get that. They're going to put on their own type of identity. And then you can say, okay, I want the Canoe type of identity, or I want the Volvo type of identity, and I will subscribe to that because that's what I want ferrying me around this city. Or you will then ultimately just say, you know, and again, in the future, autonomy, and I want to be seen in that, you know, Louis Vuitton coat rather than the whatever, like, you know, I don't know, some other luxury manufacturer brand, like, you know, so you got like different products. And I think that's the way that it's going to go. It's going to become more fashion oriented if if you kind of follow my where I'm going here.
So actually, Luke, let's take this idea. I mean, we were talking about Canoe. And obviously the biggest issues with these new startups and like these new companies, and I want to talk in particular about EV startups now and kind of move it away a little bit from the car itself. But obviously biggest news this week was Dyson coming out saying we, with pretty much immediate effect, have stopped our car project. And we see more and more of this company, of these new companies, Dyson obviously, you know, going down and saying like we're not going to do the car. You know, Byton and Neo as a good example, always looking for new funding. Faraday, a very good example for new funding. You can see Lucid obviously with a lot of money coming from Saudi Arabia, but very funding heavy. Canoe, a very similar one now. Rivian, a very good example with regards to funding. But so we see a lot of trouble with these new EV makers. And I just wanted to talk about this briefly because I think it's, we're almost at the end of a cycle now. And very, very few, and I am pretty much out there to say, I would say probably only Rivian is really there to make it now. Are in this position to do it, you know. And I think it is a problem of the brand. It's about problem about the design. So, you know, how do we position these products? But I think it's also a lot of people have, you know, underestimated how difficult it is to make a car.
Oh, absolutely. Without a doubt. I mean, you know, it's not like it's 1901 anymore. No, you're not just putting a couple of wheels on a carriage. You know, developing a vehicle is extremely, extremely cost intensive. And I think, you know, it's not to say, I'm sure, you know, Dyson and the like did their homework. But, you know, there's just so many factors to consider that when you start thinking about volume and things, then, you know, you realize that there's no way that you can develop a sustainable business model, which is what ultimately they did. But it took them a bit of time to get there. And I think there's a number of kind of forces that are just coming together to make that, you know, reality, unfortunately. You know, I think that one of the biggest issues, I think, right now, even though Dyson was, you know, working and going to develop this vehicle in Singapore, I think the Brexit issue is a massive thing that has come and impacted this project. I don't know for a fact, but I'm willing to speculate.
It would make a little sense because of the suppliers coming from all over the world, of course.
And there's so much uncertainty as well. And when you think about, you know, economies of scale and things like, how many cars would he have, you know, would Dyson have had to develop to actually get to that break-even point, right? And you're looking at building a factory and developing this, that, and the other. you know, developing a battery pack or, you know, doing a one-off concept is one thing. Having a full-on production line, I mean, look, how many companies are just not making money?
Yeah.
How many companies have developed and invested so much time, like, you know, into just developing things? I mean, look at, you know, just Google as an example, billions of dollars yeah. over a decade.
Apple as well, of
Nothing.
Course.
Yeah. yeah, Apple, zero,
yeah.
the show, billions of dollars. Just,
but this is
mind-blowing.
But this is what I want to say with this. I mean, even the guys with really deep pockets, yeah? So not, I don't want to say anything negative about like a Neo or a Byton, but this was started by individuals who have a lot of money, but for a car development, their pockets are just individually not deep enough.
Mm-hmm.
So you need to get in other people to make this kind of achievement and to make this work. Tesla is a very similar example, still not making money, mostly not making money. They have some quarters where they do, some quarters where they don't. So let's say, you know, they're getting closer to this break-even point of just...
Yeah, but how long has that taken, right?
Taken 15 years, yeah? So the way I see it, and this is for me the point, I think what we've learned, and this is where I'm, from a pure perspective, from a design perspective, I'm very, very thankful to these EV startups. Because they have shown that, of course, we're burning billions and billions, but that, you know, that's how it is. It was the same with the IT or internet bubble in, you know, the late 90s,
mm-hmm.
early 2000s, that it might actually be easier to go back to a certain carrosseria style.
Mm-hmm.
So why do I need a Byton or a Lucid or a Faraday as companies to build their own platform?
Mm-hmm.
Why can't they not just, you know, build their brand and they have a certain kind of wish in terms of proportions that they want to aim for, and then they just go shopping for the platform that is the closest to what they would like to have? Volkswagen is promoting that a lot at the moment. Hey, yeah, feel free to use our electric platform that we are now sharing with almost everybody
mm-hmm.
To get those volume numbers up. And this is, for me, the point. And Dyson, I think, is a perfect example of that, because James Dyson said in an article, I think it was an interview with him, he said, we will not stop the platform development.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that we're not going to produce our own car, but we're still going to continue developing certain things that come out of this car project. So I think we're now in this kind of turning point where we had all these EV startups and all these great things. And I want to say this to the designers, because, like, you know, we speak to a lot of designers, and a lot of like, oh man, like, you know, we're in a down phase at the moment. Like, there's not much happening and all these things. Like, I think actually we're at the calm before the storm, because once, you know, this carrosseria idea picks up again, like, the companies will look differently. You will only have companies that have maybe a small engineering team that lead development with their chosen partner. You will have an internal design team, because you need to find your USP somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
You will have a marketing team that will develop services around this. Yeah? You will have a board of directors to direct the company, of course. But I don't need, you know, 500 plus people anymore to run these companies. So I think the role of design with this kind of new interpretation of a carrosseria, which can go, and this is the biggest difference, I think, from what we've seen from, like, you know, up until the 70s or 80s, we will be able to see them as volumes as well, not just a small, you know, small volume manufacturers,
mm-hmm.
as you had it with Ferrari and all these kind of, you know, Lamborghini was part of this, of course, as well.
Mm-hmm.
You will actually be able now to see big volume carrosseria,
yeah.
because we're now in a situation where people understand, like, I don't need to do this because they can do it much better, and I'd rather pay them, and I can stop my production every single day if I want to, and I can, you know, just consider my cost that way. So I think actually we're just at a turning point in terms of mobility design as a whole, where things are going to go crazy in the next years, and I think even go crazier than what we've seen with the EV startups. Teams will be smaller, of course, because you don't, you know, the products will not be 15, 20 cars, will be maybe one or two cars. So you will have smaller teams as a whole, but this will have a big influence on the OEMs. So the failure of everything that has been going on with these EV startups now, because it's so expensive to build an EV platform to try to do everything yourself, has actually been, in retrospect, a very big learning curve to say, like, look, it doesn't matter if we're going to continue in EV or, you know, hydrogen or whatever. Mm. Like, no, we understand. Let people who already know these things, let do them their work. We pay them to do that for us, and then we build it based on. So I would not be surprised actually to see a Volkswagen becoming like a Magna. So you franchise, you can just go out to them and it's like, look, I want to build this car. Mm-hmm. I do also believe that companies such as BMW and Mercedes will fusion up together in the future because they need to get the volume together. Mm-hmm. Might not be that the brands are coming together, but the platforms might very likely come together. Yeah. So this is where I want to say, and this is a good example of Canoe. These guys, you know, are doing something which maybe in retrospect could be the same with Faraday, has actually been great for the next step of what mobility design is. I don't care if they fail or make it at this moment in time, but you learn from what they're doing. Mm-hmm. This is where it's getting interesting now, you know, because we're now in a position to say we've learned something. Okay, what is next and how can we implement it into like a new structure? So, and Dyson is exactly the same. And I think, you know, James Dyson got out just in time to understand, to minimize his cost. Surprised that he did that for such a long time.
Yeah.
But he will have contributed something in the future where new startups will arise and they will do things differently.
Oh, yeah, no doubt. I mean, you know, I don't think we've hit rock bottom yet. I think we're still going to see some fallout because there's been so much government incentive to create these electric car manufacturers in China, especially.
Especially in China, yeah.
So, you know, once...
California to a certain degree
Yes. But I mean, you know, China is really the driving force in the automotive industry right now. And that's why we're seeing, you know, some automakers, you know, panic, like NIO and such, you know, where these companies, I've always said, you know, there are certain companies that just are in, you know, Apple, for example, should not be building a car. They will, all they care about is the technology, is the, you know, is the, what it is that's behind it, the service, right? That they're able, because that's what they do. They're a service provider, right? So if Google doesn't create a car, but just creates a platform, for example, where they can feed, you know, consumer needs off of the back and get them to, you know, continue to spend and whatever it is that they do, they don't need to actually build a physical car, like the hardware and all of that, right?
Correct.
They just need the software and the know-how of developing, you know, a system. And so NIO, for example, had its hand in so many different pots that, you know, it makes sense to just develop a platform that you can then share with all of these, you know, startup EV brands that can bring, as you mentioned, their own specific taste and flair to a product. So I think just like now, if you go into a department store and you want to buy a pair of shoes, there's not just, you know, a handful of companies, five companies that are producing shoes, but there's 30, 50, 100, right, on the shelf where you can choose various different brands. You know, you've got your Puma, you've got your Adidas, you've got your whole range of different Nikes and whatever, and you can get something that suits your specific taste. So I think there's going to be not less automotive companies, but, you know, my vision anyway is that there will be a whole mess of automotive companies. But when I say automotive companies, I mean the guys that are putting the modular platform on top of an existing platform that's created by your Volkswagen or your NIO.
100% agree.
You know, I think there's going to be a lot of that, which is going to, because let's not forget, the need for personalization is perhaps nowhere stronger in a massive investment than a motor vehicle. I think there's a huge need for an individuality in some of these vehicles. And we've talked about this in other episodes in the past, where there's right now we're seeing this huge kind of you know, wavelength, or rather there's two different points and sectors where there's the supercars, hyper personalized, whatever, bespoke offerings, and then your BWID, you know,
your
platform
everyday
sharing
car.
Everyday thing. And I think, of course, there's a need for that, you know, and that could potentially be your just basic canoe, but I think everything eventually is going to move to electric. That's just the way that it is going to be in the future. And I've said this again, you know, we've noticed this before. I've said this in the past. Platform sharing is now commonplace within automakers, right? You've got VW, massive companies like VW sharing platforms across multiple different brands. And the only true differentiator is design. And that's the way that it's going to continue now with companies developing platforms and technology, companies like Dyson. And then we're going to have other companies that are catering to the individual and the UX experience and everything else that comes to direct contact with the customer.
Yeah.
And that is where it's going to be very, very interesting. And I'm really, really interested to see that.
And this is exactly the point for me is like, you know, you minimizing your cost in this idea of, okay, so I'm only building 10,000 cars, 15,000, 20, 25, maybe 50,000 cars. But, you know, this could be done by anybody. It could be done by an airline, could be done by, you know, your bank, could be done by your insurance broker. Like literally, it could be done by Uber as well. Like Uber could say, build me the Uber car. Like, you know, and then they have a design team doing this stuff. So this is where I see the future. So I'm actually like, just exactly what you just mentioned. I don't think that we will have fewer manufacturers. I actually think we have more brands, but we have a certain amount of people that produce these cars because they have the experience.
Right.
Volkswagen will be one of them. Nissan, Renault, that group will be one of them.
Daimler, yes.
Daimler, BMW, I think, will be one of them. I think the Americans will get together. So like GM and Ford will probably have some kind of conglomerate over in the US to do something like that. Because obviously it helps them as well. They can sell these kind of things. I mean, like, you know, last year was like, how many worldwide, like 90 million cars were sold. Yeah. So if you can bring these kind of things into countries where you don't sell that many cars, then you can specify them just for that. That's going to be interesting. So, my dear design friends, don't worry. You will not run out of work.
There's light at the end of the tunnel.
Yeah, there's light at the end of the tunnel. It might take, you know, a little bit of time to for that kind of to really set in, because the biggest need that we have for that means that we need the current manufacturers to understand that they have to open up, that their brand is part of a bigger movement, that they have to open up the platforms to not just save their brands, but to save their entire, you know, work.
To survive.
Yeah. To survive as a whole. So once that happens, Volkswagen is going that way, which is very good. One thing I just wanted to mention, but we can talk about it in a different podcast. I think electric is only the step in between. We will be going to hydrogen. Because I think hydrogen in the long term will be the best possible way forward, the most in terms of the current climate at the moment with, you know, climate change protests, you know, the young kids nowadays protesting for it, having ideas. Hydrogen with water involved will be the future, because I think it's a resource that is much easier to be used than the batteries. Batteries are still very expensive to make. You know, they take up a lot of water, a lot of lithium that has to come through that. So the process of building a battery is still very complicated. It's still very time-consuming and resource-consuming.
Yeah, quite. Not to mention the end of life cycle.
Exactly. That's a completely different topic. So I think we will be moving more towards the hydrogen side as well, which will give us back a more like a petrol tank-style car. So,
but don't you need electricity to make hydrogen anyway?
yes, no, that's very true. But
so maybe we should leave it on that, and then that's very true.
But like, you know, I still certainly believe that hydrogen will be that next step. I personally see, and from the people I talk to in the OEMs, they're like, you know, the classic EVs that we see at the moment, probably just a step in between. When we say step in between, we're talking about 10, 15 years.
Yes. Well, I mean, there are automakers investing in hydrogen heavily. I mean, Toyota's been doing it. Hyundai is doing it. I mean, there's a lot of smart people developing hydrogen cars. So I'm not saying you're wrong. I'm just, you know, it's an interesting thing to discuss.
It's not going to come from one day to another, but I think just to kind of sum this up, because this is still a design podcast, the designers will not be out of work. Yeah. Just be confident, be in a position to understand, like, look, things are always changing. don't be part of the non-change or non-changing group. Be part of understanding what's happening around you. And I promise you, things will go crazy in the next 2 years for that. So I think that's a nice little, you know,
yes, ending yes. to that. A nice positive note. Woo! Keep your head up. And like we'll see you on the next one.
Pep talk.
All right. Take care, guys. Thanks for joining us.
Cheers.
Bye-bye.